Alright, Place to Be Nation Universe, we are here for the NXT TakeOver New Orleans reaction show. It's been a long time since I've done one of these. I'm your host, Chris Zellner, and I am joined by the hardest working man on in the podcast form this past week, and it's coming from me. Me, of all people. Because God knows I put in a lot of time on podcasts, but this man's been grinding hard this weekend, giving you all the audio you need from your WrestleMania extravaganza of indie shows and what have you. And I highly suggest that you go to placebnation.com and check out all of his pod blasts that he's put out, because he's done yeoman's work, as they say. I am joined by the man, the myth, the legend, my colleague in the premier podcast brand, Dylan Hales. Dylan, this is how many podcasts have you done so far?
I've recorded 7. I think 6 of them have been released. I'm not sure if the Shimmer one is out yet. I've been overworking the Place to Be Nation boys by just sending these in rapid fire succession. I'm sure by the time this comes out, the Shimmer one will be out. So it'll be 7, and then this will be 8. I may or may not do one on Style Battle. I have mixed feelings about it, because kind of the idea of these shows is sort of the instant reaction, kind of like what we're doing here. Yeah. But I feel weird not doing that last big WWN show since I did all the others. But we'll see. We'll see. And then I'll probably do, if nothing else, I'll probably do a wrap-up show where I talk about the best stuff from the weekend as well. I've had a lot of fun doing them, and they're all bite-sized. I think the longest one was the Janela Spring Break one, which was like 30, maybe a little bit under 40 minutes, and the rest of them have all been a half hour or less. So they're bite-sized, they're relatively easy to get through, and I've had a lot of fun doing them.
Absolutely, absolutely. So everybody check those out. All right. NXT, TakeOver New Orleans, and you look at the card going in, and it had the potential of being one of the better shows as far as in-ring stuff. And we'll talk about it at the end. I think that we now have a new standard on that, at least inside the ring. We'll talk more about outside the ring and the finishes and the booking as we go along, because there is some question marks, we can say. But we begin with the ladder match for the North American Championship, which is interesting to see the NXT is introducing another secondary title. The belt looks tremendous. It's an homage, I would say, to the old 70s U.S. heavyweight title belt that was used, where it had the entire United States of America on like a Burgundy-ish strap. So it's a really cool touch. And plus, a North American title being contested in New Orleans. I mean, you can't beat that. They should have gotten Duggan. They should have got Duggan, DiBiase. They should have got whoever. Terry Taylor, for God's sakes. He's on staff. You know, bring them out there and have them, you know, be out there as like the ceremonial people for the match.
Bring out Butch Reed and really make me excited.
Oh, God, yes! Yes! Bring out Butch Reed, you know, Magnum TA. I mean, bring them all out, you know, whoever's around. But, yeah, I loved it. It was in New Orleans, so it's tremendous. We have EC3 versus Ricochet versus Adam Cole versus Killian Dane versus Velveteen Dream and versus Lars Sullivan in our match here. And from the entrances, I mean, you could tell, and they say Ricochet for last. This guy already has it. He's a mega star from the jump. Hasn't even wrestled on television. And has only made 2 appearances on television. But the NXT crowd is a knowledgeable crowd. So they know Ricochet's past. They know of what he's done. And the one thing that we can always say about NXT crowds, especially when the indie darlings come in, they know them, and they can get them over to the WWE style fan base that wouldn't really know who these people are. And I think Ricochet is going to be a prime example of that in the long run. And his performance in this match was insane. I mean, the first spot he did was this huge springboard shooting star press to the floor. What a way to make your debut. And he was tremendous in this match. EC3, this being his first big match. Guy was in tremendous shape, carried himself well, took some of the worst punishment in this match. And you can definitely tell he was glad to be back in. Killian Dane and Lars Sullivan were tremendous in their roles. They were the big hosses out there that were doing things a little bit differently, using their power, and it totally worked. And I'm a fan of having big guys in these types of matches. I always dug Kane in the Money in the Bank matches because it added that different element that was needed to balance out all the smaller guys doing all the wild high-flying stuff. You had the big dudes just throwing dudes around. So that was great. Velveteen Dream, of course, already a main man in NXT. The elbow drop off the top of the ladder is going to be a spot that will be remembered for many years to come because the dude was higher than the belt was on a camera shot. His head was over the belt that was hanging from the roof. That's how high he was. And he looked great here. And, God, he put himself through some punishment. And it was just an amazing match. Adam Cole gets the victory. I kind of thought that EC3 would have come out on top in this one to give him a big win in his debut. Ricochet, I made the point on Twitter that he didn't need to win this match because this match was basically the base for him to get himself out there, become a star in NXT, become a top guy, and they firmly achieved that goal, I think. But Adam Cole gets the win. The fans were excited for that because Adam Cole has a very vocal fan base, as we know. And he looked strong in this match. This is a great performance from Adam Cole. Dylan, I know you're not one of the biggest Adam Cole fans out there, but the guy is on a roll right now. And your thoughts on the match itself and Adam Cole is the winner.
Yeah, so this was an incredible match. There's no question about it. In my mind, as somebody who has watched all the WBN stuff and a little bit from the WrestleCon Super Show, I've seen a lot of the wrestling that's taking place this weekend. On paper, the match in my head that this was most comparable to was probably the three-way tag team street fight from the Mercury Rising Evolve Super Show, which happened last night. And that was a really good match, but this match was at a totally different level. I thought it was extremely, I don't know who agented it, but whoever did a tremendous job. Because the layout for this match was about as good as you could possibly have. In a match like this, ideally what you want, especially when you've got multiple guys that you're kind of introducing in the match, which is, was really the case with both Ricochet and EC3, ideally what you want is everybody to have that segment where they look like the biggest star in the match. And they look like somebody that is, not just on the level of being good enough to be in NXT, but on the level of being, a superstar. And every single person in this match got at least one moment like that. Really, a few of them got multiple moments like that. And to some degree, you could argue the one that didn't get that got the least of that was Adam Cole, even though he did have a little mini super kick party in there. But he, in a way, that kind of makes his win more logical from the perspective of he's a heel and he snuck in the back door. Of course, the fans don't treat him as a heel, but it is what it is.
Never have.
They really haven't by and large. But it is what it is. One crazy thing about this match was how long it was. I mean, this match was over a half hour long. And that would really be what we saw, from a few matches on this show. I mean, this was a 5-match show that went quite a bit over 3 hours. I think it was 3 hours and 7 minutes or 3 hours and 8 minutes long with 5 matches. And yeah, you had some pageantry in the entrances and whatnot, but nothing at the level. I mean, the vast, vast majority of that was bell time, in ring time. And this match sort of set the tempo from that perspective too. But the great debut for Ricochet, great debut for EC3. I agree with you that having the big guys in there was smart. I added something a little bit different. I'm shocked we did not get a Lars Sullivan headbutt off the ladder. I thought that was almost a foregone conclusion. Yeah. In a way, I'm glad we didn't get it.
The ring might have broke.
Yeah, no kidding. And plus, I don't want the guy killing himself. And also, I think it added to Velveteen Dream's big spot that he was really the only person that did anything quite like that. Although you did have that insane spot with Ricochet doing the moonsault off the tip ladder.
Oh,
which is nuts. That might have actually been even crazier than the Velveteen Dream spot, just from a body control perspective.
Mm-hmm.
This was a great match, and I'm to the point where I'm kind of over WWE plunder matches. The matches have to be laid out and very well and worked extremely hard for me to even like be even a moderate fan of them at this point, because so many of the tropes are overexposed. Here they did do some of the usual stuff, but the way it was laid out and the way it was patterned, you didn't always see it coming, or you thought you were going to get one thing and you got something a little bit different. Like when Dream did the sort of float over Death Valley driver with Ricochet, in my mind, I was not envisioning that being the next spot. Right. So when you get that, it's extra brutal on top of just being brutal. Mm. And there was a lot of stuff like this in the match. I mean, on most shows, this would be the blow away best match of the show on most shows. Right. It was not on this show, but on most shows it would be. As for Adam Cole winning, look, I'm not a big Adam Cole guy. There's no secret about that. However, in his defense, I do think he's been good this year. He's good in plunder brawls, especially. So that's the one area where I think he clearly is a good wrestler. In a straight up wrestling match, you know, I don't think he's bad, but to me, he's just whatever. He's just a guy. But, you know, when you bring out the props and the gimmicks, he excels in that environment. He's kind of like Edge in that way, really.
That's a good comparison.
And, you know, this was his environment. And I thought he stepped up and looked great in this environment. And I think that's a credit to him. I'm not going to knock him for that. Do I think he was the standout of the match? No. Do I think he was bad? No. He was really good in this. Everybody was. The spot with Ricochet diving on Lars's back and the ladder breaking was probably my peak moment of the match, just for how crazy it looked visually. But there was so much in this that was really great. Would Adam Cole have been my choice to win? No, for a couple reasons, not the least of which is the fact that I think it was pretty clear Authors of Pain were not winning the tag titles, and I did not really want anybody to walk out of the building tonight with two championships. I'm not really a fan of that. And him winning pretty much guaranteed that they were going to do it, which they ultimately did, as we'll get to. But I also don't think he was the worst choice. Killian Dane, for example, I don't think had any business winning it. And that's not a knock on him. I just don't think he had any business winning it. Lars Sullivan does not need a title. He had no business winning it. I think it's arguable that Velveteen Dream doesn't need a title, although I had picked him to win it because there was a part of me that thought they're going to give it to the young hot hand who's over and they don't know what to do with as a main event guy. One of the cool things about this show was that really, with the exception of the women's match, the finish for all the other four matches was kind of in doubt. I mean, this was not a match where the finishes were completely telegraphed. I mean, the main event is arguable, and we'll get to it, but by and large, four of the five matches on the show, you really could not have guessed the finish with any degree of real certainty beforehand. To me, Cole as the winner was kind of a middle-of-a-pack winner from a storyline perspective. I would have preferred Dream win it. I would have preferred Ricochet and EC3 win it, although I understand not putting a title on somebody right when they get there. I get it. But I also don't hate him winning it.
Yeah. I mean, and we'll talk about that when the tag title situation comes up, because, I mean, I thought that once Cole won this match, that may have sealed the fate of the tag titles for them losing, but we know that obviously didn't happen. Now, I think where we go from here, though, is I think Ricochet and Dream is going to be a feud. I think that, you know, Lars and Killian are going to probably still do their thing. Cole, we'll talk about him later. I'm thinking here, and I'm just going outside the box, and I'm curious to think about it. There's no strong heel, unless they do a rematch for Aleister Black, and we'll talk about him later. Aleister Black and EC3 might be something they go to start off with. Do you think they put EC3 in the feud for the main title this quick, or what do you think they go with EC3?
I have no idea. I mean, I have no idea. I mean, we'll get to it, and we can talk about it when we talk about the main event. But I had figured Ciampa would win, and because it seemed like Ciampa Ciampa was the logical person to wrestle Black first if Black was winning the title. that didn't happen. So yeah. I actually don't think there is a good opponent for Black, to be perfectly honest. I don't think they have a single one on the roster. Because if the if EC3 loses this match, there's no credible reason why he should be given a world title match. I mean, why? Like,
he didn't win.
I know.
It's like I said earlier. I mean, there's no jobs in a ladder match. You got somebody just gets the belt. So it's basically a spotlight match.
That's fair, but that's Gato style fail up booking, and I just think it's trash. Like, the fail up shit does not fly for me, and it especially doesn't apply for me when guys are debuting. Actually, I think it's especially bad when guys are debuting. If they wanted to do EC3 versus Aleister Black, you know, at the takeover after the next one, they could probably build to that, and I think that would be fine. At the next show, I almost don't think there's any way they could shoot it on TV that I would like it, just because I don't like the idea of failing up thing. And with Cole now having the mid-card title, you can't go to that well, which, you know, they've kind of exposed that anyway. But the point is, you couldn't go back to that. I don't know. Do you do an Almas rematch? I mean, we'll see.
It all depends on the shakeup. I think we probably will get an Almas rematch. And because, you know, we'll talk about that, how that all ended. But really, I mean, the best, probably guy that should be getting the championship match is, was on the pre-show sitting there waiting to come back. Drew. And Drew hit it. I mean, and he talked about it on the pre-show. He said that it didn't matter to him who won the match because Almas, you know, if it was Almas, he would love to, you know, take it back from him. And he said that, you know, if Black won, then they'll just restart their feud from Europe. Where he said, we tore up Europe, we tear up here. So, and then there's a lot you can go with those two from their past. So, that I'm sure that's coming in the future. But anyway, we'll see what happens after that. Now, yes, this match went long. And you were mentioning about who you thought agent in this. I'm got to wonder if Shawn Michaels didn't have a hand in this one. This kind of seemed like a Shawn Michaels type of match. Would you think that?
It's possible. I mean, I feel like the main event was 100% a Shawn Michaels type match. But it's possible. I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't stun me, but it didn't immediately jump off the page to me as a Shawn Michaels fingerprints match. I'm actually a little bit curious why you say that. Because to me, the main event, if I had to guess, was, I mean, that's like as melodramatic Shawn Michaels as you get. But then again, you know, it's not like that's all Shawn's known for. It's not like that's the only thing he can do. It's possible. It's possible that this was Shawn agented. Whoever agented it did a great job. I actually think this was the most well put together match on the entire show. I don't think it was the best match on the show, but this was the match that had the highest potential to be a train wreck for obvious reasons and even some not so obvious reasons. And it totally succeeded. I mean, it was very good. On most shows, this would be the best match. Probably on 99% of shows.
Yeah. The reason why I say that is because you look at who's the guys that are, you know, involved with NXT and agenting. No, I don't think anyone knows a ladder match better than Shawn Michaels. And just some of the touches and even the length of the match, I think it kind of gave me a – as I was watching, I was like, okay, I think Shawn had something to do with this. I think Shawn's – I mean, he may not have been the main one, but he had his touches into the match. I mean, that's what I was thinking. I mean, just stuff I was seeing because –
It's certainly possible.
Yeah. All right. Next, we have the Women's Championship, which had to follow that match. I was like, oh, my God. Well, I mean, you had to follow up with something. Ember Moon versus Shayna Baszler for the title. Ember got a live music intro. Lizzie Hale from Hailstorm playing guitar. And that was pretty damn cool for her to have that. And Shayna was there, and Ronda Rousey and Jessamyn Duke were in the crowd for her. So they got the obligatory horsewoman shot. And I thought going into this match that the best way to book this match, short match, Shayna, you know, Ember puts, you know, a strong fight on to begin with, then Shayna just steamrolls her, wins the match, comes off looking like a complete monster. They didn't do that. Ember came out and just, you know, she went straight from the bell and was aggressive as shit, you know, and they were playing off previous matches. It was a good back and forth. Shayna basically separating her shoulder and popping it back into place. She's tough, boy. She is tough and continued on and had a strong performance after that, because, I mean, that wasn't even close to the end of the match when that happened. And it played into the finish where she couldn't even wrap her left arm around Ember. She was using her hair as leverage, which was great. And just the way all that stuff was done, really nice job of setting it up. And again, the aging in this match, I think, was done very well. Ember passed out from the pain. And it was a good way for Ember to lose and stay strong because, I mean, she fought and fought and fought and fought and just eventually couldn't fight no more. And that was great. A great job for them to do that to, you know, keep her over as a babyface. But Shayna wins, which was the absolute way you had to go. Absolute way you had to go, because NXT women, there are so many babyfaces, and basically it's Shayna and Lacey Evans. I know, because Peyton and Billy are they're going main roster. I mean, that's just happening. So you got to have a strong heel champion now, because you got all these baby faces around, and like Kairi Sane, Dakota Kai, and others. So now it's time for a new generation here, because I think Ember Moon will be on the main roster. I don't know if she'll be in the Battle Royal at Mania, but she's going to be on the main roster very, very soon. But this is the match, like you said, that pretty much was the Stone Cold lock of the evening. As a finish goes, everybody knew who was going to win. They did it. They didn't pull no shenanigans on here. And, yeah, they achieved what they need to achieve. So, Dylan, your thoughts on the match? And Shayna Baszler's champion. Where we go from here?
This was a great match in its own right. It kind of in an impossible position. I mean, it's one thing to have to come on after like really great wrestlers or even a really great opener. It's another thing to have to come after a really great opener that goes, you know, 30 minutes with Ricochet in it and get Velveteen Dream doing elbow drops off ladder. I mean, like, it's kind of an impossible position. And I will say, it wasn't like the crowd wasn't into it. They were absolutely into it, but they were not into it at the level of the other top title matches from the night. And, you know, I don't think that's an indictment on anybody. I think part of that's just card placement. I will say, I think, look, Ember Moon's very good, but there's still something missing there. Having said that, she has to go to the main roster. There is nothing left for her at NXT. I'm not entirely sure she should have beat Shayna in the first match.
I thought Shayna should have won that first one, yes.
But she absolutely did not need to and should not have won here. And they protected her extremely well in defeat. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who was more well-protected. You know, they did the deal where she got to hit her finish on the floor, which the fucking camera missed somehow. Just as good as the camera shot was for Velveteen Dream's elbow, the miss of the Eclipse on the floor was, you know, that was like, New Japan Strong Style Evolve level bad camera.
Access TV like, level.
Like, yeah, I mean, that was real shit tier stuff. It was just, the match was really great and totally different than the first match. It was all psychology. I mean, that's what it was. There was enough big spots in it to give the fans something to sink their teeth into if that's the kind of fan you are. But by and large, this was an all-psychology psychology match. It was based around that arm injury and whether or not that was going to basically take Shayna out. And also, it was comeuppance for all the damage that Shayna's done to her arm, Dakota Kai's arm, everybody. I mean, there was a nice psychology to it on multiple levels, which I love. They protected Ember by having her hit her finish on the floor, and then, you know, which presumably if that had happened in the ring, she would have won. And then everything from Shayna countering and just sort of putting the brakes on the Eclipse attempt in the ring to that whole struggle in the finish was great. You could argue, as I've seen some people do, that Ember hitting her foot on the ropes kind of takes away from it a little bit, because in theory that should have been a rope break. But it didn't really bother me that much in the grand scheme of things. You know, Shayna having to use her hair and selling the arm, and Ember sort of valiantly trying to fight for the arm that she had been able to weaken from a terrible position where it was really her last chance and she knew she had to go after it. It played off of the finish of their last match where she survived in this armbar forever and was able to turn it into a roll-up and kind of steal a win. So you kind of believed maybe she's going to do it. And then she didn't, you know, and she lost, and it was clean as a sheet in a way that still protected her, both as being tough and as maybe somebody who might have could have won if she could have just damaged the arm a little bit more, or if she had hit the Eclipse in the ring instead of on the floor, maybe she would have won. That's how you want to protect somebody on the way out. I think she obviously has to go to the main roster, and I think, you know, me and my brothers do predictions for Mania every year, and we already did ours, and my prediction to win the woman's battle royal is actually Ember Moon. I think that would probably be as good a way to debut her as they're possibly going to come up with. That crowd, at least the number of people that are there, who knows, that early in the show, but that crowd is probably going to be one of the crowds most likely to be extremely responsive to her. And I feel like, you know, if you give her that win, it gives her some sort of established energy coming out of the gates. You know, and it really doesn't hurt that she lost to Shayna, because Shayna is A, a badass, and B, she beat her once. They were 1-1. You know, like, it's not like Shayna mauled through her. It's not like Shayna almost her to her Gargano, which, don't even get me started on that. You know, so there's a practical out, even from a kayfabe perspective. And I think you can debut her extremely strong, even though she lost in a definitive fashion on the way out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have the Queen of Spades, now the Queen of NXT. So we'll see what happens there. And Kairi Sane, Dakota Kai, now they're starting to get their chances at the title, which is needed. It's time to get some new blood in there, for sure. So we'll see what happens from there. All right.
And one more thing. Yeah. They announced this weekend that they're doing the Mae Young Classic again.
Yes.
So with Ember being out, you know, I don't know if they announced a timeline for the Mae Young Classic or not, but
they didn't.
Presumably, it's going to be in the next, I'd say, 3 or 4 months. So this is a perfect opportunity to sort of set the table for that and kind of redo that division, because there was a time where the NXT women's matches were getting the biggest reactions on the shows, or at least minimum comparable reactions to the top stuff.
Well, Bayley was the face of the brand.
Absolutely. And that's not the case right now. It's not that the show, it's not that the matches don't have heat, but they're clearly down a peg. So maybe they can reload and kind of get things back to where they were.
Yes. And we'll definitely see who they bring in, because they have plenty of chances to look at some participants this weekend, that's for sure, between all of the indie shows and everything going on. So expect to see a lot of those names pop up for the Mae Young Classic number 2. All right, Adam Cole was sewing his ribs in the trainer's office before the tag match, and he was unsure if he could go on. Well, we know what's going to happen there, as that's the next match coming up. So the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic Cup and NXT Tag Titles on the line, as Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly, the artist formerly known as Future Shock, defend against the Authors of Pain, winners of last year's Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic, and the makeshift tag team of Pete Dunne and Roderick Strong. Now, in a moment that popped me before the match, we had Dustin Rhodes and Jeff Jarrett sitting beside each other out there in the front row. Great to see them there. Dustin, who Love to see him get a run in NXT one time before he hangs up the tights. I think he'd be great there.
And arguably a top 10 tag team wrestler of all time.
Oh, God, yes. So they were out there. I saw people, you know, predict before the match what they thought was going to happen in the finish. And I kind of, and I was, as I was looking at that, I really didn't even think about it until then. And then when I saw it, I was like, well, that's very plausible. And then that's what happened. But we're gonna talk, I want to talk about the match itself. Of all the matches tonight, this one felt like it had the lowest amount of heat. And there's reasons why. The Dusty Classic kind of has been a clusterfuck this year. And it's not, and some of it's not any fault of them. I mean, Bobby Fish getting hurt definitely, you know, was a setback. But Authors of Pain, I mean, everybody knows what the, I mean, they're just, you know, lame duck right now waiting for the call. And they just didn't need to be in this spot. The makeshift team of Dunn and Strong, I mean, it worked out for doing as they did what they did at the finish. But, you know, Dusty Classic, you know, had this, you know, has had this history of having, you know, these great matches and these great tournaments. And this year, just it just fell flat. And then we come to this match, and we had the flatness here with the heat. Now, the guys worked their asses off. And Kyle O'Reilly looked as good here as he's looked at throughout his whole NXT run. And that was what he needed to do. So I'm glad he got to showcase himself. Cole sold his injury. AOP was just beating everybody's ass. Ronnie and Pete looked really good. Pete Dunne looked great on his own. And then we got the finish where Pete had Kyle dead to rights. And then Roddy, you saw, and the camera caught it. You seen Roddy come in the ring right as Pete is getting ready to cover Kyle. And I said, oh, here it comes. Boom. And there he was, putting the boots to Pete, puts Kyle on top. And Cole and Kyle just sit there and look at him. They could not believe it. And then he pulls out the armband that they had given him all those months ago, when he tried to recruit him then, and puts it on his arm. The place goes nuts. They celebrate. Bobby Fish comes out on crutches. They pose at the top of the stage. And NXT, I mean, they really do need a top heel stable. And now they really have that. Sanity could never be that in a way because just the people in the group weren't as strong as personalities, or, you know, no, I mean, they were good, but it just didn't come off that way. This group could come off that way. Pete Dunne automatically has people he can bring in his British Strong Style brothers, Tyler Bate and Trent Seven, to, you know, have 6-man matches against these guys, and it's going to work out. It makes sense. Roddy's with his former Ring of Honor brethren. Cole can now focus on being the North American champion while Roddy defends the tag titles with Kyle because they got free bird rules going on with the belts. So it makes sense in the end. They kind of turn chicken shit into chicken salad in the end. But still, it just wasn't. This whole Dusty Classic thing has just not been the best of things this time. And I don't know. This was probably the least match on the show. Your thoughts?
It was clearly the worst match on the show. I don't think there's any question about that. But in fairness, and I tweeted this out earlier, and I'll just make this point now, of the 5 matches on the show, 4 of them, if somebody said they were in their top 10 right now for this year, I would be perfectly fine with it. 3 of them, if somebody said they were in their top 5 for this year, I would be perfectly fine with it. 2 of them, if somebody said they were their match of the year or even the best match they'd seen this decade, I wouldn't argue it. I mean, that's how strong the match quality was on this show. I'm not saying that's where I would place those matches, but my point is the quality level was so high that this match, which was good, above average, easily. I mean, I'm not really a star ratings guy, but, you know, I'd like gun to my head, I'd probably say this 3.5 star match. 3.25 or worse. Yeah, I mean, it was it was clearly a good match, a borderline very good match. But it just, you know,
The intrigue, I think, was not there for many of the reasons you outlined. Everybody assumes AOP's done at NXT, as they should be. You know, Dunn and Roddy were clearly a makeshift team one way or the other. But I mean, I don't think anybody necessarily saw the turn coming. But you also really couldn't see them winning the titles. I did think there was a chance that it would happen. I didn't think they'd have a long-term reign. But I thought there was a chance that it would happen, especially when Cole won the title, because I figured, well, are they really going to put a tag belt on him? But, of course, that's before we got the turn. And I think they're going to do a deal probably where Roddy ends up holding the tag title and defending it, and I hate that.
They mentioned it on commentary.
I mean, it was mentioned. It's garbage. It's trash. Like, to me, it's inexcusable trash. It's not something I ever want to see. Especially in a promotion that's booked the way NXT is booked, where so much of what they do is logical and thematic, and there's a reason for stuff. I get injuries happen. I hate that Bobby Fish is hurt. He's a great wrestler. He's at his age, to have this kind of injury, it especially sucks. It's not that he won't be back, but it's like he doesn't have that many years left to make a lot of money in wrestling. I mean, so it especially sucks for him, and I hate it. But and Roddy and Kyle will be a great tag team. That's not the point either, right? I mean, because they will be a great tag team. But that's not who – it was one thing when Cole was stepping in to defend as part of the stable. I still didn't like it, but I could accept it.
But well, here's where it doesn't make sense. Here's where it doesn't make sense. If you're going to run with the narrative that Roddy is with these guys because they're the champions – him and Pete would have been the fucking champions if he hadn't turned on Pete.
Correct. I mean,
that kills you.
I get that there was a long-term payoff there, and you could argue that they have a similar background, and he doesn't like Dunn because he had that match with Dunn, and there's a personal issue from that. So there are outs there, but a lot of people love the angle. I thought it was a well-done angle. I thought it was really well done. I just don't really like the table that's being set. And the thing with the Undisputed Era, too, is you're right that they can be a heel stable, but on the other hand, are they even going to get heel heat? One thing you can say about Sanity is for a long time, they at least did get heel heat. People did hate them. I'm not entirely sure you're going to get anything approximating heel heat for the Undisputed Era.
I agree.
And the other problem that you've got is they've got mid-card titles now. So even if you're of the opinion that they need a lead heel stable there, which I'm not certain that I agree with you on that, but I understand why you would want it. I'm not sure they need it, but I get why it's useful. How can you be the lead heel stable if you're in the mid-card? So, I mean, I don't think it's like the worst booking decision of all time, but I don't like it. It's not to my taste. The match was good. I liked that they protected Pete Dunne in defeat. They protected him very well. I watched it with Lana, my girlfriend, and she felt like, yeah, I mean, that was like her one observation is that they really protected Dunne. And I think that's true. And maybe something that's easy to miss. You know, his finish was certainly going to end the match. And, you know, so that's I liked the dynamic early of taking out Cole. Although I do think it kind of telegraphed that the Undisputed Era was going to win, I liked the dynamic of that because it made you think about how the match was going to work structurally in a different way. And while I did not love the commentary as I never do when I was in the booth, I did think they did a good job of pointing out that now it's really, you know, a couple teams of two and Kyle by himself. And what are they going to do? You know, there were some great exchanges in the match. Good match. Don't get me wrong. Not in love with the tornado aspect of it at times. I'm more of a tag team traditionalist when it comes to stuff like that, especially on a show that already had a wild, out of control ladder match. But it was good. It's just a match where it's, you know, I said that I tweeted this out and I'll say it here. This is one of these really weird shows where it was a great, tremendous show. Maybe the best takeover ever. Instinctively, I think it was, at least from a match quality perspective, almost certainly. However, where we're left with characters and the shape of the promotion and some of the angles coming out, it kind of has me less interested in NXT than I was going in.
Well,
and I don't like that I don't know that you can call a show the best ever of something if you're less interested about the show, the shows in the future.
Well, here's the thing. So here's the thing. We know they're going to do the shakeup. I mean, they've already said it on television. It's just a question of when it happens. And NXT is in that spot right now where you have people that you think are going to go up for sure. And of course, they throw some curveballs. So it's a turnover on the roster. And I know that they, War Machine got their names tonight. They're now the War Raiders. They were on the TV taping. So they'll be on TV Wednesday. So I got to think they're going to be in this tag title scene. I don't think the Undisputed Era probably has those titles for very, very long. Now we're going to start seeing. I wouldn't be surprised if Dijak is on TV on the next taping. We're going to start seeing new guys come in. Especially with NXT, is we look at this show and we say, and it's rightfully so. We wonder, okay, why did you do this? Who are you setting up for the next thing? This is like the year ender for NXT in a lot of ways because they're going to start a new year. And I've heard this said about WWE for WrestleMania. It's the year ender. It's the year end show. It's the Super Bowl. So it's the year end show, and you start a new season at the WrestleMania. And we see that on the Raw at the Mania every year, just about. Something big happens. But so NXT is going to be going through that. We got the transition and turnover of talent. Guys going up, women going up. Now you got to replace them. So, yeah, we look at this now and you wonder, okay, they got the tag titles. What do we do now? Well, like I said, the newly named War Raiders, and there's other Street Profits are still around, and I think they're gonna, keep getting spotlight on television. So I mean, there's things that could happen. That's one thing about NXT. NXT has a very deep roster that we don't really think about how deep it is because they're
It's actually probably even deeper than we realize too, because I mean, one thing that is worth mentioning, and I may as well mention it now in this context, as this show is going on over across town at WWE Access, you've got Chris Hero wrestling Walter. So, I mean, at a WWE show, you've got one of the most beloved figures in NXT. Whether he's been one of the top guys, not really, but he's certainly been a featured guy on TV at times. And he's wrestling Walter. And God knows what else they had on the show. Earlier in the day, they had Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch wrestling the damn Evolve Tag Team Champions.
With Stoke.
With Stoke. So you're Dickinson and Jocka wrestled there. Austin Theory wrestled there this weekend. Keith Lee, Jason Kincaid, who's not even somebody that anybody has said is on the radar. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, Keith Lee is as good as there.
Yes.
It's just a matter of when he debuts. Let's just be candid about it. Yep. I have very, very good reason to believe that the same thing is true of Austin Theory, even though he just won the WWE title. Who knows who else is got one foot out of the door, or if they're going to end up doing – it's entirely feasible that they could end up doing a situation where Chris Dickinson and Jocka, just to take an example, end up doing what Gargano and Ciampa did, where they wrestle some indie dates and some NXT dates, kind of like Martin Stone does now. I mean, the depth is not an issue for them. The issue is the sort of crazy stuff that they've done with some of these characters and stories. And on the one hand, it's created, probably the most compelling babyface in wrestling since Daniel Bryan and Johnny Gargano. And on the other hand, it's left you wondering, what the fuck are they doing with a lot of the other stuff on the show? And even with how they've booked him at times. So it's really odd.
I'll give you that. Watching NXT TV sometimes can be an adventure. Seeing, okay, why did you just do that? And the takeovers too. I mean, it's interesting. It's like, the guy we're about to talk about, you mentioned Gargano. I mean, going 0-4 against Almas. I mean,
that's listen, we'll transition to the main events here, the dual main events sort of here in a second. After the results of these main events, That booking decision, especially in my opinion, is one of the all-time worst booking decisions that they've ever had in NXT. Like, it's so inexcusable that anybody who defends it immediately loses credibility to me as a critical thinker. You can't, like, it's one thing to say Alma should have won the feud. I don't have a problem with that. It's one thing to say that Alma should have even three matches, I would be okay with him losing. Although really, they only needed him to lose fucking two of those matches. Two of those other matches were really inexcusable, especially the Loser Leaves Town gimmick. Why the fuck did they even do that match?
Yeah, I mean,
how are you going to do that match and then turn around and do the same gimmick versus Ciampa here? It makes no sense if Gargano's going over. I mean, we'll get into it, but listen, I get that people love the matches, they love the characters, and the character presentation and portrayal has been excellent. Do not get me wrong. But, the actual way the story has unfolded, if this was any but promotion other than NXT or maybe Modern New Japan, it would be eviscerated. It has not been told in a logical fashion. It just has not, period.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about that one because we'll definitely talk about that one when we get to the match. All right, let's talk about the NXT Championship match, which was not the main event, nor should it have been the last match on the show. Andrade Cien Almas defending against Aleister Black. You look at the match on paper, this is going to be a hell of a fucking match because the two guys involved. It was definitely that in every way. Star of the match could be Selena Vega. I mean, she was tremendous in her role, and she was doing everything she could to save her man and her title, and then it cost her in the end. I love that touch that they did that, all this interference, and it finally backfired at the end of the match, causing her man to lose the title. Both these guys here just was going balls to the wall, all out, hitting all their big moves, kicking out their big moves. Great near falls in this match. You said this, and I definitely want you to expound on it. It's definitely in play that Andrade Cien Almas may be the best wrestler in the world right now, especially in a big match environment. And I think there's a definite case to be made for that one. And he held up his part here in every way. Aleister Black has this unique about him that makes his matches feel like it's important. Even if it's not for a title or anything, if it's just a match on the card, it feels important because he's in it and his just unique style of working. And I thought these two guys really worked great together. And Selena just kept screwing Aleister, and he was going to make an attempt to get at her. And it didn't happen. She ended up, screwing her man, like I said. So, Aleister Black, the new NXT champion. I know there's been all these rumors about Almas and Vega going up to the main roster, and God knows they should be there because they are a main roster act if there ever was one together. They will be tremendous on the main roster once they get up there. But if Almas is going to lose in NXT, he should have lost to Johnny Gargano. Now, do they do that match before Almas goes up? Maybe. They may do that match, and Gargano may get his win. But now it kind of feels anticlimactic, even though Johnny really doesn't probably need the NXT title because Johnny is the face of NXT. And he is the brand right now. But there's been rumors he's going up too, so who knows? He shouldn't, I don't think, right now. He's got unfinished business. But Almost losing to Black, it was very questionable. So, and even then, if you're not going to do Almost and Gargano, when Drew's back, Drew gets his rematch, and, then you can put the title back on Drew and have Drew, avenge his loss to Almost. So, Almost should have probably retained his title here. In fact, I'm definitely sure he should retain the title here. But he didn't. Black's got it. And now we're in a situation where, like I talked about earlier in the show, who is his challenger? Who is going to be the guy to step up and become the number one contender? Do they go back to Almas? Do they do some weird, maybe babyface match with Gargano? EC3, they're going to try to push him up there. Ciampa, I mean, it's going to be tough for him. He just lost. I don't know. We're in a state of confusion right now with the title. But one thing we weren't confused about, this is an awesome match and a tremendous match. So your thoughts on the match? And here we go. Where do we go from here?
The match was excellent. Just an excellent match. I mean, again, not really a star rating guy, but this is the kind of match where it's over and you start to think, what could they have done better? And other than the fact that I think the wrong guy won, I'm not sure that they really could have done anything better. It is crazy to me that it feels like almost his legacy is to have these tremendous matches where it feels like the wrong guy won. But the biggest problem with Almas losing this is really the only person he successfully defended against was Gargano.
Yes.
And now Gargano can't beat him for the title. It just makes Gargano look like a chump, frankly. I mean, he looks like a dork loser, frankly. I mean, let's just be honest. I don't see any reason to sugarcoat it. Like, there are ways they could have done this, taking the belt off Almas, keeping Gargano down there, that I think would have worked. But man, that 0-4 stat is just brutal. And Gargano, they could go to Gargano versus Almas, but if it's not for the title, do you really care? And they could go to Gargano versus Black, because as people have pointed out on Twitter tonight to me, Gargano's the one person that's beaten Black in that. But if Gargano wins the title from Black, does it really matter? I don't think so, actually. I think the whole point is the chase of Almas. I actually think what happened is they radically underestimated how interested people were in the Almas and Gargano feud. I think in their minds, the whole thing was going to build to Ciampa anyway, and it doesn't matter. And I think they failed to realize that they actually had already – they created two out-of-this-world feuds for Gargano. And I think they thought they could just transition from one to the other without an issue, and maybe they could have if they didn't do the loser-leaves-town match. That fucked it all up. And now you've got this situation where – There's not a good out with these guys. Look, back to the match. It was a great match. It had a couple of brilliant dive spots on it. The kind of spots where, you know, the timing is just perfect. One of the corkscrew plancha that Almas did. The other was early in the match when Black did the moonsault and Almas just sort of walked right into the impact in a really natural way. Those were two of the prettier spots I saw from any promotion all weekend, which is really saying something considering some of the guys that have been wrestling on these indie shows. Incredible back and forth match. This match was extremely enhanced by the fact that you didn't know really for sure who was going to win. Some of the near falls in this were incredible. I mean, again, on most shows, these would be the near falls that you'd be talking about and thinking about. But then this wasn't most shows.
But no, it was not.
The spot where toward the end where Black does the dive and then rolls in and almost catches him in the single arm DDT. I mean, you thought for sure that was the finish, and it wasn't. And that was just amazing. I mean, that I will say that was the moment where I felt like Black is definitely winning this. But it was so well done that even as I thought that in the moment, I did not care. The knees up against the ring post, which was the kill shot against Gargano, if you may remember. Black survived even that, which I actually don't know how I feel about that. Like, if Almas is getting called up to the main roster immediately, I'm perfectly okay with it. If he's staying behind, I kind of wish that had been protected, kind of like a Randy Orton punt situation where it's a death shot. But it was an amazing moment when Black kicked out of it, make no mistake. The finish was great, as you noted, with the bump that Vega took on that – Aleister Black took on that Vega Rana
where he spiked himself on his head, like the Invisible Man at Joey Janela's Spring Break taking a pile driver from Jimmy Lloyd, was absolutely nuts. Fucking bonkers, especially for that point in the match. I mean, this match was crazy. They gave him a lot of time, and I still think, funny enough, this didn't have as much time as the main event or the ladder match. But they did tons of stuff here, but in a way that didn't feel like overkill. There was a logical sort of progression to what was going on. You know, and they protected the Black Mask because but it was done in a way where when he hit it, it was Vega, like you said, it was the interference of Selena Vega is what cost almost the match. It, you know, it didn't help him, it cost him. And you wonder, if he was not holding Vega, would he have been able to duck? Would he have won? And those sort of things, those sort of nuggets, I think are cool. And it also does leave the door open for a rematch for those two. You know, NXT tends to do rematches anyway, which I think sometimes is kind of overblown as a trope in wrestling. In this case, there might actually be a logical argument to do it, though. But look, my personal thought was that Black is the guy who's ready to go to the main roster right now. If there's ever been a guy on NXT who has a main roster act, it's Aleister Black. That guy could be on the main roster tomorrow and I think would be one of the most over guys in the promotion. And he's not even one of my favorite wrestlers, by the way. This isn't me homering it, you know. I'm just being blunt. Like, he has every tool they want. He has size. He has look. He's unique. He's got the ring entrance. He's, you know, got a style that can mesh pretty much with anybody on the roster. I mean, he's main roster ready if anybody was. Not that Almas and Vega aren't as an act, but I just feel like you could airdrop. Black's a guy that could have done 3 months in NXT and been on the main roster. And I think keeping him there to give him the obligatory title win just feels like a waste. I don't know. Like, and I also feel like they had set the table with Almas beating Gargano, who's so beloved, beating him 4 times. They'd really set the table for an all-time Almas title run if they'd wanted to, right? Like, you could easily see Almas having almost like a Ric Flair run over the next 6 or 8 months and then losing the title maybe in November at a big show there. And in my head, you know, it's unfair to project that, my fantasy, onto the booking, I guess. But in my head, that seemed like such a no-brainer idea given that they had given him those decisive wins over Johnny. And you could say, oh, well, Ciampa cheated in the last one. Fine, whatever. But the point is, the one that everybody remembers is the last takeover. And that was a decisive win. And it just felt like it should have been the beginning of a run for Almas, not the end. I don't know. I didn't like Black winning. But it was a great match. And as you alluded to at the beginning of this, Almas, to me, is, if you're looking at it purely from a peak performance perspective, from, you know, he does not get as many matches as other guys, so he's never going to have the volume. But from a peak performance perspective, he's incredible. I don't think there's anybody better than him, other than maybe Gargano on the planet.
He's fulfilling the potential that he's always had. I mean, when I watched him as a young kid, you know, working in Arena Mexico at 18, 19 years old, you can see that this guy has the potential to be the business. I was always a fan of his. I just thought he's a transcendent type of talent. You know, he gets signed, he flounders, and then they put him with Selena Vega. They give him this new outlook, new type of gimmick. That's, you know, this confidence, and the guy found himself. And He has taken that ball and ran with it harder than anybody you could ever want to run the ball. I mean, he has done a tremendous job here. I think this was the wrong decision. I think he should have retained the title, even if he's going to the main roster. Wrong decision. Have him go up as an NXT champion. I mean, it's not that hard to do. He can work both. They've done that before. You know, with people where they worked out NXT, like their bookings in NXT, and still was on the main roster. Have him go up as NXT champion. I think that'd be a cool touch. I mean, yeah, you would surely telegraph, you know, him losing the belt in his next big match, but still, I think it would have been cool. And Alcibiade did not. He doesn't need a title. He doesn't. He doesn't need.
Yeah.
A belt.
Oh yeah. He's an act that absolutely does not need the belt. I mean, at all. He's much more Undertaker than he is, you know, John Cena.
Yeah, and like I said, Gargano doesn't need the belt, but it's the symbolism of him beating Almas for the belt.
Correct.
That actually means more than winning.
I don't think anybody really wants Almas to have a long reign. Well, let me amend that. I do think there are people who want Gargano to have a long reign, and part of me thinks that the WWE is afraid of putting the title on Gargano because they don't want Daniel Bryan syndrome to break out when he inevitably has to lose it. But I feel like he almost has to win the title at least once, even if he just holds it for a month. I feel like he almost has to win it at least once. And I will say on the subject of Gargano before we transition, because I don't want to forget this, a part of me wonders if they're keeping him in NXT for the time being because Bryan is coming back and they're just too similar as characters.
That's a great call. I mean, if you do bring Gargano up, you definitely have to have him on a separate show. There's no way you can have him and Bryan on the same show.
No way.
Even though Bryan, you know, was very vocal today saying he wanted Gargano on SmackDown, there's no way you have both of them on the same show.
They're basically the same character. I mean, there is some nuanced difference, don't get me wrong, but what makes both guys work is the same thing at an elemental level. Is Gargano a little bit more Rey Mysterio-ish in some ways than Daniel Bryan? In my estimation, yes. Bryan is, like, if you have a spectrum of sympathy baby faces, Bryan is a little bit closer to Mick Foley, and Gargano is a little bit closer to Rey. Not stylistically, but in terms of how they're engaged with the audience. But ultimately, they're much closer to each other than they are to either of those guys. And I don't think you can have them in the same place at the same time. So I don't know what the end game is going to be there.
I think Gargano's more like a Ricky Morton, and maybe even Mid-Atlantic Ricky Steamboat.
Yeah, I could totally see that. I could totally see that too.
Yes. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But we have Black as a champion. It definitely feels like a transition champion, so we'll see how that goes. All right, now we get to the unsanctioned main event. They had a deal where Triple H was backstage with Gargano, making him sign this contract that absolved WWE from any type of legal situations here if Gargano got hurt. Drake works as a referee wearing a non-traditional referee outfit, which I thought was a nice touch. He had gloves on, too, ready for blood. We never got that. But Johnny Gargano and Ciampa came out in standard wrestling gear. if I was going to nitpick anything about this match, that would be the one thing. But it is what it is. They wanted to show off their great bodies, I guess. I don't know. But they do have great bodies, folks. Those two guys right there are shredded. They are shredded. God love them. They put in the work on that for sure. Ciampa not having any ring music is so great because it allows the fans to just completely bury him with chants. And boy, did they do that tonight. You know, fuck you, Ciampa. You know, all this. I mean, they were just killing him. My favorite chant, though, was the one where he got powerbombed on the concrete and they chanted, you deserve it.
The only good you deserve it chant ever.
The only good you deserve a chant ever was on that one. But these two guys went at it. I saw people complain on Twitter. They were nitpicking a little bit about how they thought that the action at the beginning wasn't as frantic as it should have been considering everything that had went on. But these guys were going long, and they had to go 30 minutes, I would think, if we look at it.
I don't know what the time was, but it was definitely very long.
Yeah, so they went long too. God, they did so many different things, playing off of past situations between the two, whether angle related or even when they were in tag team. The spots in this match were crazy. A spot, if you think about it, I don't know if this ever has happened before. It definitely hadn't happened in WWE. But when you got the guys on the table, where one's going to suplex the other guy through a table, and Ciampa doing the exact opposite and suplexing Gargano off the table onto the floor. Oh, that looked like it hurt. Now, at least that floor has some padding. But man, it looked like it hurt. And, I mean, they took out Mara at one point in the match when it went through, when Ciampa got tossed into the denounced table. I know some people enjoyed that. And, and which got a Mamma Mia chant, too, by the way, from the crowd. But they even had a Planet Fan out there with crutches, and the crutches came into play, playing off of Ciampa using the crutches against Gargano. And the angles previous, you know, happened. The powerbomb on the concrete floor was awesome. You know, I joked earlier on Twitter that during the ladder match, Kip Allen Fry was, you know, had the checkbook ready for the best match of the show. In this match, Bill Watts was proud because they had the mats pulled off the floor. So it's concrete. So, ode to 1992 WCW bosses on this show. But, God, the one thing you said about this match is it had the great action. It had the drama. This was a dramatic match. I know some people would say it's more melodramatic, but this had the drama. The fans live in the building. I know I saw some people say that they thought the fans weren't as into it. People I follow on Twitter that were there live said it was just an amazing atmosphere. And it came across to me on television that way. So I don't know. But they were into everything, and that, I mean, the build up to the finish, the near falls, the power bomb on the knees off the top rope, I thought was the finish. I thought there's no way Gargano's gonna kick out of this. He did. And the use of Ciampa's knee brace, he hit, you know, Johnny hitting him in the knee as he's running, and then just, you know, stretching him with the brace as he had him in the Gargano escape. Oh, tremendous, tremendous finish. Crowd goes out of their minds. Candice LeRae comes running out to hug her husband. And God knows, the jokes were about, so there's going to be some amazing sex tonight in the hotel room. But, this was a great performance from both men. Ciampa, you know, he's a main man now, for sure, no matter what. Gargano already was. He cemented himself yet again. One of the best matches in NXT history, if not the best match in NXT history, which we said that about Gargano and Almas in the last takeover. Funny how Gargano's involved in both of these. But just a great way to end the show. Even though we thought that Gargano, as we went in this match, you and me both on Twitter, we're both thinking Gargano was going to lose because what we saw would just happen in the previous match. But nope, Gargano won, and it's definitely questionable about Ciampa. I mean, it's like, wow, now what's next for him? But yeah, it's great way to end the show, and the fans definitely got their money's worth. This one. So, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, this was an incredible match. I mean, from my perspective, this was like a combination between the peak WWE melodrama, you know, Ultimate Warrior talking to his hands after Randy Savage kicks out of his finish. Like that sort of WWE melodrama.
I love you.
I'm sorry, I love you. It was like a combination of that and a Lucha Apuestas match. I thought that structurally it was actually very similar to a big-time Lucha.
Wait, J.R. Goldberg brought up on Twitter, this was the WWE's version of Sangre Chicana en Mes Una.
I mean, in a way, yeah. Because the bill, I actually disagree with anybody who says it wasn't visceral enough. I mean, I loved that this was not a prop-heavy brawl. They already did one of those on the show. WWE does way too many of them to begin with. Were there some weapon-ish things in this? Yes. But this was not a match that was primarily about, oh, what's the next spot going to be where a guy gets thrown through something or hit with something. That was not really what this match was about. And to the extent that the props were used, they were used in ways that were subtle and smart. I mean, one thing they did in this match that I thought was absolutely genius was they would set something up in the right way and build to the spot in just the right way, where you set it up, establish it as dangerous, give them some time for the crowd to forget that it's there, and then come back to it and give them just enough of a moment to realize, oh my God, they're going to do this, and then do it. They did it with the exposed turnbuckle. They did it with Ciampa's brace. They did it with the floor itself when Ciampa was powerbombed on the floor. All of those things, the table was set much earlier, and then they came back to it. They even did it with a crutch. It was masterful in that regard. Maybe the best I've ever seen in wrestling history, actually. And I try to actually stay away from those sort of statements these days because people so often, regret them later, myself included. But I really can't think of an example of those sort of things being done in a match at this level that was anywhere near that good. The performances from both guys were great. I mean, Gargano's the ultimate sympathetic babyface. Ciampa's the heel everybody loves to hate. I mean, the guy looks like fucking Bin Laden, for Christ's sake. Like, you could not, in terms of a heel look, Ciampa's got it 100% down.
He always has looked like a psychopath.
Yeah, and he's, you know, Ciampa, I happen to know, is one of the smartest guys in wrestling when it comes to match structure and thinking about how to lay things out. And, you know, I definitely think Shawn Michaels had his fingers on this, but I'm sure he had a say in a lot of this, as did Gargano himself. The near falls in this were incredible. You believed all of them. In that sense, I especially felt it was like a Lucha Puestas match or even in some cases a Lucha title match where you get that third fall where it's just bomb after bomb and anything could be the finish. And you think, surely this is it. And then that's not it. I mean, you cited that Project Ciampa off the top, but there was seven or eight before that. That you thought for sure was it. You know, Johnny getting on the Gargano escape for the first time, you thought was it. The knee to the face, or the kick to the face, you thought was it.
Long dark.
I mean, everything. There were so many where you thought, surely this is it. And you know what? It's funny. After I watched Bloodsport, I complained about near fall drama and everything being invested in near falls. But when it's a loser leave town match like this, it actually kind of does work, and it really worked here because the stakes were so high. It was the ultimate match where the win or the loss matters, and you know, it's just absolutely incredible. You know, some people will complain that some of it was too over the top, and I respect that and I get that. But look, if you're the kind of person who thought it was great and gave 5 stars to the Golden Lovers versus the Young Bucks, even though Matt Jackson at one point literally demands Kenny Omega hit his finish to him. I don't want to hear any complaint about like an obvious plant being there to take a crutch from, right? Like it's the same type of pageantry. It's the same exact type of melodrama. There's literally no difference at all. There's one difference in the sense that you could argue that it's stupid for a guy to ever demand he be hurt. But it's the same sort of premise. And for that type of match, this was as good as it gets. You do not get better for that type this type of match. Now, if somebody wants to say this isn't their type of match, I actually would understand that because I do think that this type of match, it's not for everybody. Some people might think this is insane. That's an insane thing to say, but I do think that for a certain type of fan, they don't want the story to be beaten into them so hard. But given the depth of this feud and given what these guys did, I had zero problem with it. Like to me, it was excellent. The whole layout I thought was great. The everything about it, even little stuff like Ciampa being able to counter Gargano's slingshot DDT because he knows Gargano so well, right? That's just a little thing that doesn't even matter. It's not even a spot you're really going to remember when you think back on this match in 10 years. But in the context of the match, as you're watching as a live viewer, it's a huge thing because you remember these guys were best friends. And when you see Gargano at the end, when they sort of do a version of the Magnum and Tully spot, you know, where
Gargano's got the crutch. He's broken it in half, and he can run over and stab Ciampa, and he doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to. He does. He is everything that Ciampa's cost him. He still doesn't want to do it. He still doesn't want to hurt him like that because, as I tweeted out, Johnny Gargano is not a black heart. That's the point. He's not Tommaso Ciampa. He's not a guy who turns on people. He's not a guy who wrestles to maim. That's not what he is. He is the purest baby face they've had in NXT since Bayley. And in some ways, he's actually, in a weird way, he's kind of even more pure than Bayley is. Because Bayley never had anything as extreme as what happened with the Ciampa deal happened to her. And yet he has the opportunity to finish this match, save his career, be in NXT, where his wife even is now. And he can't bring himself to do the ultimate act. And you think it's going to cost him. For a split second, you think this is what's going to cost him. And not only does it not cost him, it puts him in a position where he's able to get the win by submission, by using Ciampa's knee brace against him. I don't know. I mean, look, this is one of those matches where in 20 years or 30 years, and people are talking about the best matches of all time or the best matches in WWE history, I fully expect that this match will be talked about.
Yes, it's a total classic. That's for sure. And with it happening on the weekend it happened, this one's going to be remembered as well, because the Mania takeovers have become some of the most memorable ones, you know, starting with really Zayn and Nakamura a couple years ago in New Orleans. Not New Orleans. Where was that? Houston? What was that? Where was that Mania at that year? I can't remember.
Which?
Dallas.
Yes. Yes.
Dallas. Dallas. That's right. Dallas. The Dallas takeover. So, yeah, it's definitely a match for the ages. I saw, you were talking, I just happened to look at Twitter, and I saw that Jim Smallman, the Progress head muckety muck, compared Ciampa and Gargano to Magnum and Tully. And that's an interesting comparison. In a way. Our buddy Alan Farrell has compared it more to Bret and Austin. I mean, you could compare this to the great feuds because it's what it is. And I don't know. I mean, do we think they're going to do another match between these two? I don't know if you can, because Ciampa won this match. I mean,
here's the problem, Chris. This is the problem, okay? And in fairness, this was mentioned somewhere. It could have been on the Voices of Wrestling preview podcast for the show. They did an excellent previews for everything over there. Rich Craich and that whole crew did a great job. So shout out to them. It's awesome. It's like 9 hours worth of previews for every Mania event, but it was tremendous to listen to. And this came up in the discussion of the show in that context. How can you have Ciampa and Gargano in the same place and not have them involved with each other? I mean, on the one hand, this felt like an obvious blow-off, right? On the other hand, are they just going to like hang out in NXT and go about their business now? I don't see how that's possible given the way the feud was done.
The only way they can do it, and it would actually be kind of clever if they did it, bring them both up at the same time, have them both on the same brand, and continue the feud that way.
Maybe. I mean, it's really hard to say what they're going to do. Very, very hard to say what they're going to do with these two guys. I don't really see an obvious path forward for either one of them. You know, if Gargano loses, the path forward is he goes to the main roster, and Ciampa, I think, is actually a really good first major feud for Aleister Black.
Yes.
But with Ciampa losing and Black winning, I actually don't see a single compelling thing that they can do at the top of the roster that makes even a shred of sense. I mean, I guess there's a group of people clamoring to see Gargano versus Black, and you could turn Black heel, but I don't know why you would turn Black heel at this point. It just, I don't know. I don't know where they go. That is the big, that's the flaw in an otherwise holy shit level, unbelievably great show, is I have no earthly idea where they go after this. In some ways, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe they can surprise us. But I'm of the opinion that typically the best stories and the stuff that's the most fun for fans to follow is pretty obvious. And the job of the booker is to get to those obvious points in non-obvious ways, but still ultimately give fans that obvious thing that they want. And I don't think it's possible to give the obvious thing here because those things have been stripped away. So I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and like you said, that can go one or two ways. It could be a good thing or a bad thing. We don't know. You know, I mean, it's definitely set intrigue for the next tapings of Full Sail. That's for damn sure. People are going to be definitely curious to see what they do there and how they move forward. And then, you know, maybe on Raw or after Mania, we'll know a definitive date for a shakeup. So that can clear up some stuff too, and when they're going to move some people up. Or if they just bring them up anyway, hell. I mean, they can't just do it anyway. But it's been a wild takeover, that's for sure. I mean, it's like we mentioned, as far as in-ring goes, probably the best one they've ever had. And everyone got to showcase themselves and just came out looking like $1 million. So props to them. And man, I tell you what, if chiropractors and stuff like that in the Florida area and in the Orlando area and other people like that, they're going to have their money's worth from some of these people. They're going to need to have their joints readjusted and try to feel good because, man, there were a lot of hard bumps tonight. And a lot of guys taking shots. And one thing I didn't mention, Ciampa, I mean, he got hard way. His eye was almost completely shut, you know, at one point during the match. I mean, yeah, this was a hell of a damn show. Hell of a damn show. So, it's pretty much a no-brainer. Thumbs up. But now the question is, was this the best takeover in history? Your thoughts?
I have to say yes. I have to say yes. I don't think you can have a show with the match quality this high that gives the fans jubilant, happy moments at the level of Gargano winning and even Aleister Black winning, which was got over huge live. I don't think you can do. Regardless of my feelings about the booking, I don't think you can have a show be this good in terms of the quality of the presentation and the matches without it being if there was anything that was comparable. I don't think NXT's ever had a show with match quality this high at a takeover. And they've had some great matches, but I don't think they've ever had a show where I could, you know, I watched thousands of wrestling matches a year. We're a quarter of the way through the year, and I could see three of these matches being top five matches of the year. I mean, I don't think they've ever had that. And I just, that carries a lot of weight with me, you know? I mean, the worst thing on the show from a presentation perspective, I'm not talking about booking choices and all that stuff, but from a purely like presentation perspective, the worst thing on the show was Ember Moon dancing like Elaine from Seinfeld to her own entrance. Like, other than that, there was nothing on the show that wasn't very good or better. And I would say it was the best. Now, having said that, and this will be controversial, and I think people will probably be annoyed with me about this, but I'm not sure I liked it as much as Janela Spring Break in terms of an overall show for the weekend. In the sense that this show did have better matches than that show, although I put PCO and Walter right there with anything on this show other than maybe the main event, which was just, you know, had the benefit of having that great feud. But that show had a sort of immersive quality as an experience that was unparalleled and extremely special in its own right. And it didn't have the what the fuck are they doing booking questions that this show had, because it doesn't matter what they do on that show. In fact, if anything, you could argue that they made some some of the booking decisions they made on that show were bold and exciting in good ways. I mean, PCO beating Walter, I actually thought was kind of paid off the angle that they'd set up and the way the match was told, where Walter was disrespecting this old man like he couldn't hang with him. You know what I mean? Like, whereas on this show, mm-hmm. it felt like they did the counterintuitive thing. It sounds crazy to say it's the best takeover ever, but not the best show of the weekend. So I don't know how I feel about it. Like, it's tough to say. I'm not sure I can fully commit to that statement, even though I just sort of put it out there as a position. Great show.
Well, it all comes down to emotional investment.
Yeah, I mean,
you were definitely emotionally invested in Spring Break because of everything that was going on.
That's true, but partially, I'm not even sure that that's the way I would put it, because there was nothing on Spring Break. I mean, I was emotionally invested in PCO having a great match, which he did, right? But there was nothing on Spring Break that I was emotionally invested about anywhere near to the degree I was Johnny Gargano. I tweeted this out. As a fan, I wanted Johnny Gargano to win. As a booker, I don't understand it. As a fan, that was an incredible and an awesome moment. And I don't want to take – I don't want the logic part of my brain to take away from the emotional part of my brain there, because it was such a great moment. But what Spring Break did have was that just sort of immersive, once-in-a-lifetime feel to it. And I'm not sure this takeover did have that, actually. In some ways it did, but in other ways it didn't. And in some ways it felt like we were cheated out of something on this takeover. We were cheated out of Johnny Gargano defeating Andrade Almas for that title, which I think had to be where they were going if Johnny Gargano was staying in NXT. And being cheated out of that bothers me on a level that is very difficult to even articulate. Like, I've probably not been bothered by a WWE booking thing this much in a decade or longer, because the storytelling is so good and the characters are so great and so much of what they've done is built to that moment. It just feels submoronic, to be honest, to not be able to give us that moment. And I don't know, but I can't. About the same side of my mouth, I was overjoyed when Gargano won, thought it was tremendous. And so there's a lot of, you know, cognitive dissonance. I can't it's the strangest I've felt about a show in a long time, because I think it is one of the best WWE pay-per-view special events, whatever you want to call it, in history. Well, I think it's in the absolute tip-top tier they've ever done. But the booking stuff, the roadmap for where they are, both in the mid-card and the top of the card, is so strange to me and confusing and confounding that I wonder if this is going to be a show where in 6 months or a year's time I look back and go, that was the end of me loving NXT. I don't know. Maybe not. But it feels plausible, and I don't like that feeling.
Yeah, it's tough to say. I mean, I'm trying to think of a comparison here. And the thing that comes to my mind is the Flair Steamboat trilogy from '89. You know, you have your Shottown Rumble match, you have your Clash match, you have your Wrestle War match. In my opinion, of the three matches, the New Orleans Clash match was technically the superior match. In many ways. But when you look at perception, it probably would rank third, because it wasn't a pay-per-view type. It wasn't a pay-per-view match, and it didn't have a title change like the other two did. To me, when I'm comparing these takeovers, there's another one that comes to mind that compared to this one. This one was technically better as far as, you know, all the stuff inside the ring and what have you. But it didn't have that moment. Other than Gargano, but it did have the transcendent moment like Brooklyn had when Bayley beat Sasha Banks. And that whole match in general. I mean, that that is probably the most important match in NXT history, if you think about it. And I that's the reason why I can't really say this was the greatest takeover of all time. In all actuality, it's number two. But it's I think that the importance of Bayley and Sasha and everything that went in around that, I think trumps everything that happened on this show.
I can totally get that. I mean, Brooklyn is their mania for NXT because of that, kind of. So I get it. I don't agree with it ultimately because I just think the quality of the wrestling on this show.
Oh, it's amazing. It was the best in rings, I go. Yeah. No doubt.
But man, there's one thing I think we can agree on. There is no more of a sure thing in wrestling than an NXT takeover.
Absolutely.
There's
every time.
I mean, it doesn't matter if you look at the card and go, I don't know about this one. It doesn't matter if you're not invested in it. I mean, it really doesn't mean shit. They do not have bad ones. I think the worst one was like a B-plus show. You know what I
yes.
mean?
Yes. Like, that's every time.
The absolute worst they've ever done would be like a B-plus. I can't. It's incredible. And it's a true testament to it. And I'll tell you what, it's also a testament to the power of having fewer matches and not running a pay-per-view every month. But that's a separate story. But just kudos to them. I mean, it was great. It was the eighth show I've watched in full from WrestleMania weekend so far. I've also watched part of the WrestleCon Super Show, which got great reports. And, you know, I mean, it probably is the best show. Spring Break is right there with it for me, but it's clearly better than everything else. I mean, Spring Break's the only thing you could even argue. Like, I don't even know what would even be in the discussion, like other than that. And that's with a lot of indie promoters and talent going out there and busting their ass and putting on good. And I haven't seen a single bad show this weekend. You know, every single show and this is not me wanting the shows to be good. Even shows that I thought had a potential to not be that great or that weren't really my thing. Like, for example, the intergender show that Beyond did. That was a good show. You know, like the Shimmer show today, really good. Evolve shows were 102, 103 were good. Mercury Rising was great. You know, Bloodsport, really good. So, I mean, these have all been good shows, but NXT, man, they just do it every damn time. It doesn't matter how good everything else looks. They just come out and hit you over the fucking head and show you how it's done.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yes, that's it. I'm not slighting this show in any way. I mean, this is the best in-ring show they've ever done. But and yeah, Johnny winning was a great moment. But it just, oh no, it wasn't Bayley and Sasha. Now before we get off, you know, we talked about the weekend shows and everything and how crazy it's been. You know, we've got all these shows, different shows going on in New Orleans. Next year, it's going to be in New York, the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, really, mainly, which is more of a centralized place. I got a feeling that I think next year's WrestleMania weekend is going to be full-on insanity. I think there's going to be so many shows running because there's so many different places you can run shows. There's going to be so many places running shows that it might be the one that maybe breaks this whole thing altogether. God, how do you envision next year playing out?
I don't know what to expect. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see who chooses to run where. I think that's going to be the big issue because, you know, I used to live in the New York, New Jersey metropolitan area. I lived in Saddlebrook, which is not just maybe a dozen miles outside of the city. But it's one of those situations where everything looks close on a map, but and if you're in parts of urban New Jersey, a lot of stuff is close. But the closer you get to the city, the closer you get to New York, the less it matters how geographically close you are to something, because
traffic and congestion and weird routes. And I mean, yes, there's great public transportation, but if you don't know the public transportation, doesn't mean a damn thing if it's great. And a lot of people, you know, are almost scared to ride it. I hope that the independent shows are on the Jersey side of the border. I hope that is the case for two reasons. One, because they won't have to deal with the New York State Athletic Commission. And two, because it'll be easier to deal with. And some people might say, you know, it's not the case when you have to do this, that, or the other thing. If it, you know, if you had to go into the city, if they end up doing, say, the takeover at Barclays, for example. Look, if I have to sacrifice going to the takeover at Barclays to just stay in Jersey for the indie shows, if I'm there, I would take that every time. It's just, I hope that the independent stuff, now, having said that, Evolve runs Laboom. They run that church in where is it? Brooklyn, I guess. So who knows? Who knows? But I really hope everything stays on in that Jersey area, maybe around Sea Caucus again or wherever, because and you got to figure, like you said, there's going to be a lot of places that are going to run. Like I can already envision a promotion like Battle Club Pro saying, well, hell, it's WrestleMania weekend. We're going to run, you know, and in some ways that'd be a good thing. Guys maybe get up there that wouldn't get a shot. Otherwise, I think one, you know, I don't want to go into this right now because we've already been talking for too long as it is, but I think one of the downsides of this year's shows relative to last year's shows are there's really no breakout star this year at the independent level. And part of it is because the shows were just almost entirely star driven, and the guys just didn't get the opportunities. And you didn't get what you had last year, where you had somebody like Dominic Greene just show up at a storage locker and wrestle a few times and do an Evolve seminar. And then a year later, he's, you know, got three big shows at the WWE deal. There's not going to be anybody like that next year because nobody got that opportunity. There was no smaller infrastructure in place this year. You know, it was crazy in Florida with the volume of shows. And I agree with you. I think it's going to be crazy in New York and potentially even crazier. You got to figure House of Glory will run. You got to figure Battle Club Pro will probably run. And who knows who else. And it could be really chaotic. And that's without even knowing where the Evolve relationship is going to be with the WWE by then, or the Progress relationship for that matter. Because things are pretty damn cozy right now.
Yeah, and that's one thing, too, that you mentioned about this weekend shows. I think the overuse of some talent was one thing about this year's group of shows that is a point that should be made. I mean, a lot of the same people work the same shows. I like it when there's more variety. There's a lot of talent that was not in New Orleans that definitely could have been there and done some things that would have been interesting. I'm not going to really name any names right now, but I mean, let's just be honest. There was some talent that we know fairly well that should have been somewhere on those on a show somewhere. I mean, absolutely. That's one thing. And I hope that's different next year in New York. And I don't know. I just have a feeling that, I know, in one of these years, something's going to happen that's just going to bust this whole thing where we're going to have so many shows, it's just going to become a detriment. I hope it doesn't happen, but I think it might, and we'll see. We'll definitely see. But, hey, let's enjoy it while we can. It's great wrestling, and the people that have went to New Orleans, I follow on Twitter, have had the times of their lives, so that's awesome. I'm proud for them. It's a wrestling fan paradise in many ways. So anyway, we've been talking well over an hour and a half here. So we're going to head out. WrestleMania's tomorrow. So we'll see how that goes. Oh my God, it's going to be a long show. 7 hours total. Or, you know, but hey, if you can sit through a Wrestle Kingdom, you can sit through 7 hours of Wrestle Kingdom. Even though it's really 5 hours.
And I might stay up and watch Style Battle tonight, Chris. Pray for me.
Hey, I got to... All right, we're recording this right now at 12:54 Eastern Time. I have to be out of the bed at 6 to go to work. So, as soon as we get off, I'm going straight to bed. But anyway, I hope that everybody enjoyed our show. And be ready for the WrestleMania reaction show where Devin Hales... way back with me, Dylan probably as well, and whew, that's going to be quite the show, I can already tell right now, especially for the Roman Reigns Brock Lesnar match. Can't wait to talk about that one. All right, for Dylan, this is Chris saying so long from the Peach State of Georgia.